So, wir fangen an. Eine Sonderausgabe. Und wenn Sonderausgabe bei Abteilung Basketball ansteht, dann dreht es sich um, in dem Fall wieder um den FC Bayern München. Wir hatten das schon mal am Karfreitag 2017.
Ja.
Als der FC Bayern den Herrn Djordjevic entlassen hat und Dejan Radonjić verpflichtet hat. Heute ist es anders. Der FC Bayern hat Dejan Radonjić entlassen und Oliver Kostic übernimmt beim FC Bayern München. Wir freuen uns, dass wir den Sportdirektor des FC Bayern München hier haben. Das ist Daniele Baiesi. Wir werden ihn gleich begrüßen und wir werden ab dann diesen Podcast auf Englisch führen, weil, Daniele, Deutsch, ich sag mal so, ich glaube, du verstehst Deutsch, oder?
I don't know what you just said.
aber natürlich ist es auf Englisch natürlich besser zu reden, zu fragen und zu antworten. Thank you very much for your visit here at Department Basketball, Daniele.
Thank you for inviting and thanks for the patience of listening to me.
Buongiorno.
Buongiorno.
Yeah, Daniele is known for, well, you don't really like interviews, do you?
No, it's not a question of liking or not liking it. I think that there's the right time and the right place to do everything. And this is, I mean, this is a sport. This is sports, and sports is made by sportsmen. And I'm not a sportsman. So you should be first interviewing other people and then come up to me.
Yeah, that's what we did. We interviewed other people, and now we're here with you because we want to find out what exactly happened and will happen maybe in the near future at your franchise. But I want to start with a quote of Rick Pitino. He said in an interview a couple of weeks ago, pressure is your best friend in life. And do you agree with this? Do you think that pressure is really best man's friend to be successful in life?
Pressure is there to testify and to show you that you're performing at the highest level. If you have no pressure, probably you're busy doing other stuff. Pressure comes from expectations around, probably. Or in my case, it comes from expectations inside of me, within myself. Mm. So, I mean, I respect such a successful coach for what he said. There's pressure of, there are different kinds of pressure, but pressures, I believe.
Rick Pitino is a legendary coach right now, coaching Panathinaikos Athen, of course. How much pressure was involved in the decision to release Dejan Radonjić?
Well, I'm not the right person to try to encapsulate things into a box. So these are complex decisions that do not come, do not happen just because of one thing or two things. The decision itself was basically, how do you say? We found ourselves at a crossroad, and we needed to decide whether to keep going down the same path, mm-hmm, or just to change direction. And we thought that it would have been hard to get different results if we had kept on, mm-hmm, going down the same road. And after having tried other stuff also before, I mean, we just decided that in order to get the best out of this season, or at least to try to get the best, mm-hmm, out of this season, we had to make a drastic change. Mm-hmm. And of course, it's never, when it comes down to pressure, to answer your question, the pressure that I personally feel is that you're taking the job away from a person. And it's never pleasant. Mm-hmm. And I've been fired 4 times in my life, so I know what it feels like to lose a professional opportunity. You quoted a coach, and I can quote another famous coach, college coach, who said that failure is never fatal, you know. And I don't think this is it might be the end of something for us and for him, but hopefully it's going to be the beginning of something better. Mm-hmm. I think it was just best for both parts. And I felt like, personally, and I felt like Dan was kind of tired of the situation that was around them with the, I mean, current situation, not anything else. Mm-hmm. And for us, it was just, yeah, I think we have to do it. And we just went for it.
Yeah. To understand everything what you decide and to understand the way you think, I think we should start with your career in Germany. I mean, this is a very interesting career because you're here 5 years. You have won 5 championships. So where you are, you...
Pretty good streak.
Pretty good streak.
I got lucky. And
You started in Germany in Bamberg after a couple of years as an international director of scouting in Detroit
with
the Pistons. You started in Bamberg and you built kind of a legendary team with the Wanamakers, Drenik, Darius Miller, you name it. In retrospective, when you think about the start in Bamberg and about this team, do you think, well, I was a badass genius, or you just won the lottery that you had really got really lucky with this at the beginning?
Well, basketball is a team sport, first of all. And there are many factors that many people, many professionals, many characters, many factors that concur in forming a season for good, for the good and the bad at the same time. Okay, first of all, I joined Bamberg. It was basically late November 2014. And they were rebuilding. They were trying to find a new direction. They actually had already started to go down a new road because I joined the club after Andrea and Trinchieri and Federico Sandro, and so I was the last one to get there. I don't believe in being geniuses doing basketball. At best, you're good at basketball, mm-hmm. and you can't.
Was January 2015, right? Something like that, during the season.
Officially, it was January 2015, but I had been around already the month of December.
Okay.
I officially told the Pistons that I was no longer with them. I think it was early December or something like that. Okay. I think it was, but I mean, sometimes life comes full circle. It was a day when Crvena Zvezda was playing in Vitoria, and I was scouting the game for the Pistons with our assistant GM, mm-hmm. and they blew Baskonia out in that game, and Marco Crespi got fired that night. Radonjić was the coach of that team, and I think I went to scout Luka Mitrovic, and I can't remember who else that was playing in Baskonia, maybe Diop. I received a proposal, and I thought it was the right move for not for my career. It's a word that I hate. Let's say for my profession and future. I think I don't want to use the word luck because it might be offensive for whoever else was involved in the success of that club and team. So I would say we were blessed to be part of an experience that I think, from a personal standpoint, is going to be the highlight of my life, I think, because the bonds that we were able to create between people there will just last forever. And no matter where you are, I mean, I had a lot of luck. Personally, being around people who, you think of Darius Miller, I want to take 30 seconds talking about this guy who tore his Achilles tendon and he's going to basically miss the entire season. Darius Miller comes as a scrub of the NBA. He was overweight when he came and he couldn't go 2 courts. He was fat, he was short breath, he was totally out of shape. And this guy changed all of our careers. If I have to name one that was a turning point, I think Darius was the kind of guy that put Trinchieri's and my, I use the word career on a different level in that sense, because it took the team to another level, and it was, to have him around, it was a blessing. And
obviously one of the best players who ever played in the BBL.
Maybe the best.
Later on, so he also had a good development, of course, and his career also got changed by coming to Bamberg. Because
for sure.
Yeah.
But I want to underline one thing. And, you know, when the NBA teams that were after Darius, not only the Pelicans, but more teams have been asked me about Darius, I said always, like, look, Darius is a guy that once you see him, you feel better than before. And a lot of guys on that team had that kind of, I think that was a group that got the best out of everybody. And this is, and we just watched everything that was happening from a very close perspective, and we didn't even pay the ticket. Mm-hmm. We were spectators and privileged spectators, and it was a blessing, like I said. And I really remember those days with a huge smile. Mm-hmm.
You had three really successful years in Bamberg, of course. You had to work with two very strong personalities, Andrea Trinchieri and Michael Stoschek, of course. And after these 3 years, let's make a long story short, it ended not very well, to say the least. And you got an offer from Bayern München, and you went to Bayern. And there are also two very strong personalities, with Uli Hoeneß at that time and Marco Pešić, of course. What did you have in mind at that time that you think, well, maybe this is another maybe difficult situation for you to work with another strong personalities again? Or was it like, this is the best project in European basketball, I want to be part of it, and it's such a great thing?
I just felt that this was the right move. First of all, I have to clarify one thing. I had informed my ex-club that I was going to leave 7 months before the end of the season. So mm-hmm. they knew exactly what was going to happen. And I didn't come.
It didn't get leaked. It didn't leak back then. So nobody knew really, if I remember correctly.
Well, there was my employer who knew that.
Yeah, your employer, of course. But it's unusual that nobody from the outside knows.
But that's the extent of the knowledge. I don't want to sound disrespectful, but as long as the guy who employs me and signs my contract knows, that's it. I mean, him and I know. And then eventually other people found it out inside the organization, mm-hmm. like a few months later. But it wasn't something that was happening, oh my God, he's mm-hmm. leaving. They knew that, and they accepted it. It was not a big story, and I didn't want that to be a big story, and it wasn't. So mm-hmm. it's just normal. I mean, the business relationship is over, and you move on to the next step. Then, at the end of the season, I received a call from Marco Pešić. And I sat down with him, and at first it wasn't easy because I said certain things, he said other things, and you know, we kept talking, and then we eventually, together with President Hoeneß, we reached an agreement, which was not a financial agreement. It was an agreement on the program, on what to do, how to do it, and who should be involved. And you know, I remember the day I agreed with them. I had just received from Marco the piece of news that Maxi Kleber was going to NBA. So you start over so we lose a German four-man starter. I mean, and you're called to do smart things and possibly take over the lead in the German league. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't afraid in the sense that, I'm... This morning I was re-listening to the press conference that Jurgen Klopp had when he took over Liverpool. And he said, compared to Mourinho, he said, okay, he called himself the special one, I'm the normal one. I'm definitely a normal guy. I mean, I went to school, and I was never an athlete. I was never a player. I didn't have any physical talent in that sense. I studied accountant. I went to university. I quit because I hit the professor. And,
You hit the professor?
Yeah, I got a little bit, yeah.
Physical?
I didn't hit him, but, I got in physical. I got a physical confrontation with somebody that was,
Italian emotion.
Yeah, back then it was, now you see me very calm. I was a totally different person
really?
Back then. Yeah, big time, yes. But then you go through some breaks in life that really teach you a lot. And in my case, privately, professionally, I have big mileage. I'm a very used type of engine. I've been used a lot, you know, and I walked a lot long distances in my life, I think. And I've said this before already in one of the interviews that I didn't like in the past. You have to imagine, you know, myself, for example, when we had the press conference after the, you know, the recent events with our club, I mentioned the Pistons trading Adrian Dantley. You know, that team with Adrian Dantley lost game five of the conference finals with the Celtics. And the Celtics lost to the Lakers in 1987 in the NBA Finals. Now, the Pistons could have been in the finals that year, but they lost because up one, 4 seconds to go, Isaiah Thomas turned the ball over in an inbound. You know, oh, there's a steal by Bird. You can go on YouTube. It's a clip. It's the one moment in time for the franchise. So me watching tape delayed on Friday night, that game, 20-something years later, or maybe even, 20-something years later, I sit down with Joe Dumars, and I'm working for him, and I'm working with him, and I'm asking him stuff about the history of the franchise, and he's asking me stuff about European players or international players. Now, you think, you know, sometimes you just stop by and you try to look, you know, the type of distance that you've walked, and you're like, wow. You know, a guy from Quartiere Mazzini, which is the neighborhood I come from in Bologna, for sure not a wealthy area of my city. And you know, I've been blessed having all of these opportunities. I can't be scared. I can't be scared of sitting with big personalities. Mm-hmm. I'm blessed of having the chance, of working with these people and for these people. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that every day. Because if I don't, for the kind of person that I am, if I wake up tomorrow morning and I don't feel this way, it's the day I quit. Because I need this. I need to feel enchanted by these opportunities that my family has been working so hard to give me.
When you came to Bayern, it was the second season of Saša Djordjević, and he was released in this season then, back then. And the situation is quite similar with the situation today. Bayern was number one in the German league, but they lost in the Eurocup semifinals against the Darüşşafaka Istanbul. And this season's the same again. They are number one. You're number one team in Germany, but in the Euroleague, you lost a couple of games and you release your coach. Can you compare the situation with Djordjević to the situation today? Are there more? No, it's completely different.
It's a different decision, different timing, different individuals, different characters. You can't compare, by no means, you can compare the two the two situations. In one case, I think there was a discussion on the methodology of work. Mm-hmm. It was a big discussion. And going forward, that change was risky, for sure. But proved to be the right one, and of course it was a big thing. A lot of people were caught off guard, but you know, these are the things that define also an organization. And I'm not going to get into details, and I can just say that the team responded, and we were afraid of how the team would respond. That team responded. And I want to say one thing about that season, which got nothing to do with Djordjević, but it is indirectly related to the change. We haven't lost much that year before until we got to the point that we played the semifinal against Darüşşafaka. And
Dominating
for
big stretches.
Yeah, long time, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And Scotty Wilbekin came.
Well, yeah.
No, it was game two. Game two, even, that was a big lead.
Yes.
If I remember correctly.
It was a big lead, game one. The game changers were two Turkish guys whose last name I can't pronounce. I'm serious. I mean, these were rotation players who came in.
I just remember Wilbekin at Audi Dome.
Well, yeah, but Audi Dome, trauma. I think if we play that game another 100 times, we're going to lose it 100 times because we were emotionally...
Yeah, it was game two. It was game two.
We were empty emotionally. You can play for a month. We're never going to lose that game. You're never going to win that game. Yeah. Game one was different. Yeah. Yeah. They beat the hell out of us in the second half.
Yeah.
And I think this was one of the characteristics of that team. When you start to play physical, the team's going to melt down.
Mm.
And but this is my personal opinion. Mm. I mean, no offense, it's my personal opinion. But I want to talk about the series with Frankfurt because there are always it never happens, or it very rarely happens, that you end the season the same way you started it. Even the season in Bamberg, when the 15-16 season, that looked so stable and so steady, had a lot of turning points. We never talked about that, and I'm not going to talk about those today, but I remember them vividly. We were in Hagen the day there was that gruesome injury. Help me with the name of the player.
DJ Covington.
Covington. We were there. And something had happened in the Žalgiris game. If you go check the box score of that game, you see the one player didn't play that game. You can go check. Those 2 days, I mean, time was suspended. The injury that we saw live was something that we started to count the minutes. Let's finish this game before something else happens. Mm-hmm. And I will never forget that day. You can ask whoever was on the bench that day. And I'm not going to get into detail. Yeah. To finish the story, I'm sorry if I took a little time.
Perfect.
The series with Frankfurt, we lose game three at home, and I'm walking out of the court. You guys are familiar with Audi Dome, so you know that from the court where I watched the game from, you just access directly the offices. And there's a staircase that takes you out in the parking lot. Now, all our employees, or the vast majority of our employees, were sitting on their staircase in shock. Everybody was in shock. They didn't say a word. And I stopped by and I looked at them and I said to myself, like, this is the definition of our season. How are we going to get out of this moment?
Mm-hmm.
Because so far we didn't have one. And this was meant to happen. It was meant to happen. These guys do not know how a normal season or a real season probably works. It's not... You start the season on a 1 to 10 scale at 5 and you finish it at 5.
Mm-hmm.
You go 1 step ahead, 2 step backwards, 3 steps ahead, 2 backwards. This is how you grow. This was a setback. But I talking about Jurgen Klopp, he says you got to love setbacks. You got to start loving setbacks. The mistake is part of a learning process. This is why, if I have to identify a moment that defined our club so far, I would point towards that one.
Frankfurt.
Yes. The
Frankfurt
game three with Frankfurt.
Let's talk a little bit about Dejan Radonjić. When you when you hired him, it was his first professional
team
job
abroad.
Yeah. And you, of course, knew about his English language skills, I guess, that he was not fluent in English, that he's not maybe the best communicator in the world. In retrospect, do you think it was a little bit risky to hire him? Because at the end, we are talking now about communication, about kind of a distance between the coach and the team. Didn't you have the fear at the beginning that this might be too early for a guy like him with no international experience, with not that language skills that he might have?
I flew to Belgrade to meet with him.
Mm.
And I knew that language was going to be not an issue maybe, but it was going to be a topic.
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, he got a lot better at that.
Mm.
Second of all, Diego Flaccadori did not speak very much English when he came over. He's getting better. So the question is not where you start from, in my opinion. You have to know where you start from, mm-hmm. and you need to know where you are right now, and you need to always know where you want to be in that sense. Because this is the journey is what matters to me, first. Second, I think that okay, there's a proverb in Italy. They say that experience is like a comb you are given when you already lost your hair. So
oh, that's good. That's good.
You know, just to
you like these Italian metaphors. I know that.
Well, they explain a lot, okay? And I started to like when I started to grow old. And when I started to lose hair, I specifically learned how to love this one.
when you get old, you always know that the things that your parents told you, they are true.
Oh, well, yeah. But like I said early on, I mean, you have to know exactly. There's a moment for everything. Mm. There was a journalist, a famous journalist in Italy, very famous, who said, like, if you're a communist when you're 20 years old, it means you're in a good way. But if you are still communist when you're 40, it means that you've been wasting 20 years. So I don't want to have a political speech, so don't get me wrong. But it was a journalist who wrote about politics. So, of course, this is the metaphor, the subject. Now, seriously, you know, if nobody gives an opportunity to a person that has never been out of his own country, basically, we will be still saying like, yeah, but yeah, he never coached outside of Serbia or outside of ex-Yugoslavia. I never worked in Germany. If everybody, and I still don't speak German, if everybody thought the same way we might be thinking now in this friendly talk, probably nobody would have ever offered me a job. So it's a question of approach, in my opinion. The outcome is different.
True.
It's a different thing.
Yeah. I mean, English is the like international basketball language. So, of course, it helps and it's easier.
Well, going back to Bamberg, I was asked one time by a Turkish journalist if I thought that building a sports culture with so many nationalities on our team was an issue, was difficult, it was a problem. And I just said that was the thing that I was the most proudest of, because it's a question of not language, but it's a question of finding a common language to talk. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, finding a common language meant to have 11 subcultures or cultures or national cultures to be put at disposal of the organization. Then the organization has to know all of the cultures and respect all of them. I think that this is the key step that gets summarized sometimes with, he doesn't speak English. Mm-hmm. Yes, but can he communicate in other ways?
Yeah, but fans and media, they can only watch him during games. We do not attend the practice, for example, where he might talk like a waterfall. But during games, of course, it was kind of a little bit awkward, I would say, during timeouts, that he doesn't talk, sometimes even not a word, or maybe one or two words. When did you guys realize that this might be a problem, this communication or non-communication during games? Because I'm pretty sure that even the president or fans talk to you and ask you about these non-verbal communication during games of the coach.
Well, your question assumes that we thought it was a problem. First of all,
maybe people ask me about it.
Then it might be a problem for you, for the people. It's different.
It's a problem for the. I think it was a problem for the fans, because the fans asked me about this situation, or they posted it on Facebook or whatever.
It was part of the discussion.
It was part of the discussion.
Has any of the players ever said that this was a problem?
No.
So
it was no. The players said. The players say it was never a problem.
So,
but. You know, players sometimes lie to journalists, or they don't tell the truth.
Then you should ask the players whether they lied or they told the truth. I can speak for myself in that sense. And the problem, if you want to talk about communication, if you talk about information, it's one thing. If you talk about communication, it's a different thing. And if we want to open this topic, I don't think you need... one podcast is not enough. Okay. I'm telling you. seriously, I think that... the point is whether there's the will to communicate, and communication is getting through. So what the other is going to receive of the message you're trying to deliver. Mm. And the games are the games. They go on camera and people might ask questions. It's a legit question. Still with Radonjić, who has all these communication issues, we still won two championships and still almost made it to the EuroLeague playoffs.
Sure.
Now, if you are relating this to this decision right now, It's if this is what you're asking me, then you have to openly ask the question.
I openly ask the question, what changed in this season? Because last season you almost...
Not this.
Get to the Euroleague playoffs.
Not this. So...
This was not the problem in this season.
Yeah, I'm saying, this is why I'm telling you, what has changed in your opinion? Nothing? So how can this be a problem now that wasn't a problem last year?
Maybe if... it may be a problem this season because... Things change. Players like Greg Monroe or the new people on the team, the new players on the team, they have problems with this kind of non-verbal communication. I'm not sure.
That is a question you should address to the players, not to me. I never had a problem with that because, like I said in the press conference, everything that happens is my fault. Everything bad that happens is my fault. It is. Just like everything good that happens is just because of me. Now, seriously, if you get the credit for doing good things, you have to get responsibility for making mistakes. You can't, in Italian we say, you can't only have the honors, and not take the oneri, which are the responsibilities. You can't have it both ways. Mm-hmm. And it never happens that you have it both ways.
Mm-hmm. What exactly changed then in this season? What was the difference compared to last season, the work with the coach and the team?
Well, I think that honestly, the way I felt and the way I feel now is that the technical proposal that Dejan went for was not received by the players anymore. Mm-hmm. So basically, the questions that the team was setting before us were not finding appropriate answers in that sense. And I'm not talking about communication in that sense. And in this sense, I think that, like I said early on in the press conference, we can't say right now, okay, this was a mistake, this was a good thing, this was a good player to sign, this was a bad player to sign. I think that this is a discussion that we need to have at the end of the season. Mm. But it is obvious that for the system we run, there have been decisions that have not been successful so far.
So at the very end, the players were not happy with the work of the coach.
No, I never said that. Sure. This is what you say. I'm saying a different thing. I'm saying there are issues related to the team or that the team has that need different kind of answers. Mm-hmm. And we did not think that in this moment Dejan was going to provide them.
Also, if you phrase it like this, if I remember correctly, Andrea Trinchieri once told me that every coach has an expiration date. So I think he said back then it was, in his opinion, it's like 4 years, like where you have...
He said 3 years, but he stayed four.
Yeah, okay, thanks for clearing that up. And that every coach is maybe different. How do you see this? Because, I mean, of course, there's coaches like Jerko Obradovic or Greg Popovich coaching for a very long time. And is that like maybe, are these special coaches? Or how is this? Because it also goes in this direction, the relationship between team and coach. And maybe there is an expiration date because you see each other very often. And if you don't refresh, which you mentioned also yesterday, in the talks that you sometimes need like a fresh injection sometimes?
Well, I'll say two things.
Yeah.
The first one is a movie line from Blade Runner.
Okay.
the light that bright, how is it? The light that shines twice as bright lasts half the time first.
Yeah.
There are people who burn their candle from both ends. Second, I was scouting the under 20 European Championships in Bilbao. I think it was 2011. And I had lunch with a lot of coaches one day. All of them were Italians. And I provoked with, it was a provocation, of course. I was teasing them, nagging them to get an answer, to understand their mindset. So back then, let's say that the regular coach value price, let's say price, not value, price on the market was, let's say, 10, okay? Mm-hmm. Let's say 10,000 euros. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, let's put it this way. But I think that that year, there was a Kansas was ranked number one in the NCAA tournament, was kicked out by some small college. I think that the best player at that college never played professional basketball. He just went straight to the coaching staff, I think. So, and I think the name of this guy was Farouk Manesh. I don't remember the name.
Farouk Manesh?
Yes.
He played in Austria.
Yeah, but he played like 1 year,
Ali,
2 years.
Ali Farouk Manesh?
Correct.
Kidding me? How do you know that?
He played for Wales in Austria.
Yeah, but he played 1 or 2 years, no longer than that. And then he joined the coaching staff.
I think he played under corner.
Maybe. Maybe. He had a monster game shooting from half court against Kansas. The day after, they appointed the new coach. They extended the head coach to a 10-year deal. And of course, the coaches you talk to are like, you see, you should do like in college. You got a 10-year deal. Nobody's going to get fired, which is not true, by the way. But this is how people tend to simplify concepts. Now, so at lunch that day, I said, okay, say that tomorrow morning I become the general manager of Biella again, because I was working in Biella as a GM. And let's say I go back to Biella. And for whatever reason, the league wakes up tomorrow morning and there's no relegation system anymore. Nobody loses the division, okay? At the end of the season, it's going to be like EuroLeague, okay? Or like the NBA. But I give you a 10-year contract. Your yearly salary is going to be half the current average price for an Italian coach, but you get a 10-year, no out, fully guaranteed type of contract. But you have to play with 10 guys who just leave the junior program. It's like you have 10 freshmen in college. So you play teams that have 10 seniors. I mean, you're going to get your ass kicked every Sunday. But maybe at the end of the year, you identify 1, 2, 3, maybe 10, or maybe one, or maybe nobody, no player that is worth putting your efforts on. And next year, you're going to have 10 sophomores. In 3 years, you're going to have 10 juniors. And in 4 years, you're going to have 10 seniors. Of course, we talk about fantasy basketball. And I asked the coaches, what would you do? Would you take the proposal or not? All of them, no exception, including Trinchieri, answered the same way. No out?
No out.
No. I need a EuroLeague out or an NBA out or the Giardini Margherita out, whatever out. And I'm like, dude, but if I give you an out, then the proposal makes no sense. Because I'm telling you, you have to see things the same way the club sees things. And you have to be committed to a long-term project. You can't have it both ways. You can't complain for being judged based on the result, but at the same time, or let's say, you can't have the salary and the benefits of the guy who wants the result, but the security of the guy who accepts to be evaluated based on the project. You have to decide one way or another, not both, because they conflict.
I'd like to talk about the situation in the back office in the last couple of weeks. When did you guys, when did things change a little bit? When you said the coach has not the right answers to what the players...
Or the team was not responding.
The team was not responding.
I think that was a quote, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Did players come to you, to the back office? Did they complain about things?
No, that's not how FC Bayern works.
No.
No.
How does FC Bayern work?
FC Bayern works that there's a structure of the decision makers. There's a president, vice president, general manager, general secretary, general manager.
It's very progressive.
It is. I mean, you ask me how it works, I'm telling you how it works. Do you want me to answer the way you want or the way it is? I mean, I always said, you ask me a question, always get an honest answer. Otherwise, you get no answer. I'm not going to lie to you.
I mean, I can rephrase the question.
Okay, so rephrase the question then.
How does FC Bayern work in difficult times when games are often lost, especially road games with very high margins?
Okay, when was the first blowout loss we had?
This was in EuroLeague.
You guys don't know that.
I mean, there were...
Kimki at home, 13 points.
It wasn't a blowout loss.
It wasn't a blowout. It was Baskonia. At Baskonia, 93-60.
So it was when? I think it was like 2nd of November.
It was one game after the great win against Real Madrid,
sure.
By the way.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So then things started to change.
So we did not offer an extension to the head coach when we beat Real Madrid, and we did not fire him after Baskonia.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a process, yeah. And there is a trend that needs to be analyzed. Now, for example, I give you a hint. It's numbers. They don't necessarily, they're not the reason why you make a decision, but they're a tool, okay? So we are the team that plays the slowest pace in the EuroLeague, but we're also the team with the worst defensive transition.
Mm-hmm.
You want to know how decision works? Decision works also on evaluating these things.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to be, of course, analyzed. It's going to be talked over. And is going to be, a point of discussion. Like, okay, how are we going to fix this? Are we fixing this by doing the same things we did before? Okay, let's see if they work. They don't work, then we have to change. Okay, then the second change doesn't work. Then the third change doesn't work. Then the tenth change doesn't work. Okay, what is this leaving us to do?
Mm-hmm.
This is how decision works. But you can't. And it's not happening that we just flip the coin, heads, he stays, tails, he goes.
No, of course.
Because this is, I've heard this so much. Yeah, but you know how they are. No, you know how they are. People, I mean, I understand the fans and I respect the fans' approach, but it's
there's a lot
fans
of emotion
approach.
Involved for sure. During these times.
This is what we sell. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Our team, just like any other team in the world, sells emotions to the fans.
Yeah.
Now, what kind of emotion did we sell in the last 2 months in the EuroLeague or in the Bundesliga?
Yeah.
This is a question I'm asking you guys instead of coming up, why did you do this? Why did you do that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not trying to find an argument.
No, it's all good. It's all good. I see it exactly the same way because we are involved as well. And we also want to show a good product to our spectators and viewers. We also love to see good basketball. Doesn't matter if it's by you guys or Alba Berlin. So it was a tough stretch for everybody involved, including the back office of FC Bayern, us journalists, and of course the fans.
Can I interrupt you for a second just because you mentioned them? I spoke to my friend Himar Ojeda, okay,
yeah.
when they came to Munich to play and when we went to Berlin to play. And I said to him, like, yeah, I see you're a little stressed. The EuroLeague is a different beast you have to deal with. Ooh, yeah. You know, okay, I don't want to speak for him. But, you know, it's like, yeah, you know, sometimes you get, some kind of, yeah, we should do this. We should do that. But, you know, I have hard times. He didn't say that. He said, like, yeah, I try to keep everybody calm. And this is what we're trying to do because, you know, yeah, we would like to win more games, definitely. But, you know, we're rookies and we have to learn our way. Nobody can skip steps. And this is the correct approach that if you ask me, and I tried to have the same approach. I had the same approach in Bamberg when a lot of people around me were losing their mind because we lost 12 one-possession games.
Mm.
But we competed. And they compete.
Yeah.
Also in professional sports, it's really tough because you're measured in wins. So if you, it's not always
by
the case by many people, sometimes by people above you even. So
I measure performance.
Depending, yeah.
I personally
you
measure
do,
performance.
Of course. But sometimes you cannot influence it. Do you know what I mean? Is maybe, for example, in Bamberg, I don't know, if Mr. Stoschek doesn't see it like this and doesn't give you the time for this process...
I don't want to talk about Mr. Stoschek, of course, but I can only talk
Let's
about...
Let's say club owner.
Well, a club owner has the role of the club owner, and he is the owner, so he is going to make his own decisions. I can explain what I can explain.
Yeah.
I can try to, you know, it sounds really, really bad as a verb. I can try to quote, educate...
Yeah.
people.
I know exactly
who may,
what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't say it in a disrespectful way. You get me.
Yeah.
I can try to lead people through people who have not an expertise and not an experience through the how do you say the details of performance, winning and losing.
Trusting the process.
Look, I worked in the NBA probably for too long, and I learned too many things. Because I believe that, you know, I give you this example. Everybody, or a lot of people, look at Žalgiris like, yeah, that's a team with no talent. Yeah, yeah, that, probably it's a team with not so much talent as other teams have. But they have a history. And you know, it's like somebody who has gone through difficult moments. The entire environment, this is the example I gave you of the back office, since you talk about the back office people in shock after game three with Frankfurt. You have to go through that to learn how to go through that the next time. And you need to know what happened those 2 days. For example, we played in 48 hours, game three and game four. I think that if there's a week between game three and game four, we're in trouble. We're in big trouble because there's the time to hear and to listen to every kind of interference coming from outside. The fans complaining, this guy should go, the other guy should go. Why did they fire the coach? Why did they bring in this player? Why didn't we sign anybody for the playoffs? Blah, 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 blah. I understand and I respect this opinion, but there's a reason why I never learned to speak German. Because when I was in Italy, I was reading all blogs, all media, all social media, all website, everything, to the point that I stopped working. I cared about what was said outside of the organization, instead of inside the organization. This is, to go back to your first question, you don't like to do interviews. I don't compare myself, of course, I mean, to RC Buford. RC Buford is...
Yeah, well, never give interviews.
One
rarely,
per year.
Rarely.
One, yeah. two yeah, times yeah. per year, yeah. maybe.
Wasn't one podcast once, I remember. Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about coaches and the relationship they should have with a team. You mentioned Jürgen Klopp, and a couple of days ago, Robert Lewandowski said Jürgen Klopp is a coach that you would walk through the fire for. You love him to death, let's say. Do you think that this is really important that... a team has such a close relationship to a coach, or that is not that important?
No, I think there's no. I cannot talk about a rule in that sense. I can only talk about personal experiences. I think that first of all, a team needs to have a higher purpose than playing for somebody or something. Than playing for some coach. Okay, of course. I'm not saying, to summarize it, if you don't play for your coach, you're not going to win. I think it's going to help if you play for your coach. Playing for your coach is going through fire. Jasikevičius just said one thing in an interview some time ago, and he said like, yeah, I was a big time player in Lithuania, but if you don't give your team the impression that you're always teaching the guys something, all the credit you have because you're a player's coach and you're the good guy, or you are such a big time player to answer even some of your questions before, you're going to lose that credit. You're going to lose it very, very quickly. It's going to be gone if they realize that you're just not good enough.
Bayern München is still, of course, one of the most challenging projects in European basketball. I think many coaches would like to coach this team. Can you profile what a coach should bring to the table when he wants to coach Bayern München?
Well, no, I can't. If I do it, I'll do it. I can't. I mean, if something like that is getting done, needs to be done first inside the organization. So we need to know what we want, okay, in that sense. You need for sure, and this is the extent of the things that I can say as an answer to your question, you need to feel honored to be part of this project. But you need to know what the meaning of the word project is. It's not, I'll get in, I'll say to everything they're asking me for in a job interview, and then I'll do my stuff. which is a very frequent reason why there's dysfunction between the team and the coach. Mm. You got to be the right guy. You got to be the right person. You got to be, you know, Jurgen Klopp, just to mention again him, he said, we have to switch from being doubters to believers. One thing that these people who have so much success do is to keep it simple. Mm-hmm. And this is a simple sentence, but when you hear it, like, damn it, why didn't I say that? You know? And you wonder. But, you know, this authenticity, you mm-hmm. know, he is true. And probably Robert Lewandowski, I don't follow football, but I'm fascinated by stories, you know. I like to hear people saying something original that can enrich my point of view. And this is why I try to read as much as possible. I'm not, you know, yesterday, for example, I read an article. It was an interview to the CEO of Microsoft. And this man quotes the author of one book, and I just ordered it on Amazon, you know, because it's not related to sports. It's called The Second Mountain. After you climb up the first mountain, which is the mountain on top, you have success, okay, professional success. You get to the top of the mountain and you realize that maybe the scenario, the panorama, the look is not, yeah, it's good.
Not
it's nice.
As expected.
But it's not fulfilling you mm-hmm. as much as you thought, which doesn't mean that it's not important. You have responsibilities. And there's a lot of people in the office that look at you as, okay, we give our profession, our work every day, 8 hours, we take away from our families because we believe you're gonna help mm-hmm. give us personal and professional satisfaction. This is sometimes something that managers like me, coaches, players forget. And this is why I mentioned the Italian poet, you know, in the press conference. You know, it is understood, it is forgiven. It's not. It's small stories that, and the second mountain mentioned in the book is the quest for a moral life. So what do you commit to after you have committed already to professional success?
Mm-hmm. And let's talk about the short-term future then. There are upcoming games that are really, of course, difficult to play, Ceska, Olympiakos, Panathinaikos. What do you expect from the team? Not from the new coach, not from Oliver Kostic. I think he has this is a tough job for him and it's a really big challenge. But what do you expect from the team, especially against Moscow in the home game on tomorrow evening, of course?
I don't expect tactics and X's and O's and, you know, making this shot or missing this shot to be what makes the difference. I expect to see people diving. That I expect.
Defense.
Defense, hustle. I think we are, I don't remember which position, we're very low in hustle points in mm-hmm. the EuroLeague.
Yeah.
To give you another answer to the questions you've been asking me so far. I think that this is something that we have been losing recently mm-hmm. and we need to show purpose, desire, you know, will and toughness. It looks like we have no purpose. Mm-hmm. What are we playing for? I mean, yeah, okay, we go through the motion. Okay, bad season, you know, tomorrow is another day.
Is passion maybe also a fitting word?
For sure, for sure. If you want to call it that way, for sure.
Because you said the word stale yesterday, and the team was in a stale, kind of moment, or how do you say?
Yeah. Moment.
Are you kind of disappointed of the team the last couple of weeks?
No.
Yeah.
No, disappointment is not a word I would use for situations like this. How can I be disappointed for something I contributed for the most part, and if not for the only part to put together.
You feel really responsible for the situation.
I am responsible. I'm the sports director, so I direct sports.
So there
I have
is
to
a,
be responsible.
So there is a chance that you might get released as well.
So?
How big are the chances?
Well, this is a question you should not address to myself.
You have a personal, you have a feeling in your gut, I guess.
Yeah, but I'm not going to share it with you. I have it. No, so, listen, seriously, this is a serious question. I feel responsible. It's got nothing to do with being released or fear of being released. I don't operate on fear.
No.
I have other issues.
Nobody should.
Believe me, I have other issues that I have to deal with that if I approach them with fear and no courage whatsoever, I would be dead right now.
Yeah, fear is not a good friend, of course. Pressure is a good friend, like Rick Pitino said.
Or responsibility and accountability.
Accountability.
Reason.
Yeah.
Those are all things that I always keep in mind when I have to make a decision. Mm-hmm.
Daniel just said, you direct sports. So a very basic question, maybe a very difficult question at the same time. Can you explain how your job works on a daily basis, how the European player market at the moment, because this is also a very much discussed about topic, how easy is it or how difficult it is to get players to Munich with a specific profile you're looking for, and how is that in your everyday life?
Well, I'm going to share something with you. It's not the third secret of Fatima, but it is something that describes.
I heard that there's no third secret, by the way.
Well, I believe it or not, I'm not a very religious guy.
I'm an atheist, but I read stuff like that.
Yeah, well, look, whatever.
Let's get back. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no problem.
We believe in sports.
Look, this is how I think my job. This is how I intend my job. Okay, everybody thinks you choose this player or this other player.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, it's not.
People. Yeah.
It's not. Yeah. Or basically, it's not limited to that.
Yeah.
It is, of course, but not for the most part, especially in a young club like FC Bayern basketball. And it wasn't that even in Bamberg, because, you know, in Bamberg, there was a structure already that had been working together for over a decade.
They played EuroLeague before.
Exactly.
And yeah.
I just had other, I had dreamed, the way you want to pronounce it, it makes no difference. The idea of building the team that way with 11 different passports or even more or a little less before. I've always said that I'm a big European Union person. I'm not, maybe the way it was practiced, it's different, but the idea behind that is great. Okay. This is there to show and to explain some of the choices we made. One for all to mention, Veremenko. It was an additional passport. Okay. It was a part of that, you know, the reasons why we brought him in.
Bagaric with two passports?
But Bagaric was already there when I got to Bamberg.
Yeah. And for the jumpers.
For the what?
For the jumpers.
Well, he defended an inbound in game two of the finals.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. Hey. Yeah, I remember.
I'm sorry.
I remember that. I know where I come from. Yeah. I'll never forget.
Game two, 2015.
And I know how it happened, that game. So, and well, I have an interesting story to tell you. If you're interested, I can share it with you. It is a beautiful story, and it is basketball related, about that game too in that series later on, if you're interested.
Sure.
To go back to the work.
Yeah.
I think, for example, when I came in and I was asked by one of our partners, SAP, to implement and develop and give them feedback and contribution in developing a scouting tool, okay? Scouting database that is going to be the archive of our data, okay? But at the same time, something that, you know, they can possibly customize for basketball teams and go out on the market with.
Like a competitor to Synergy then? Or
No. It's two, they actually, it's two different things.
Okay.
One is a database
that
is, let's say, the tool you use to store your information. Mm-hmm. Synergy is a platform that contains video and contains numbers related to the video that is contained in the
numbers
platform.
Especially. Yeah, okay.
So it's analytic. It's different.
Yeah.
The SAP thing works with Synergy, to summarize.
Yeah,
they're not conflicting. They're, let's say, they're actually a synergy, okay?
Yeah.
They can work in synergy. But then, you know, I was asked the question, yeah, but how are you going to use this? You're not going to have like 25 scouts like an NBA team. And I said to myself, yeah, we can't hire 25 scouts. I would love to have them, but I can't. So through the experience in Bamberg, for example, I called one of the youth coaches in the office and I asked him, like, can you tell me the roster of this EuroLeague team? And this young man, motivated, ambitious, and with a big desire of having a coaching career, could mention only one player. So my point was, how can a youth coach prepare his players to play in EuroLeague in the future if he doesn't know what EuroLeague is all about? So this was the thought process that I had. And I had the same thought process in Bamberg. I just didn't have the time to put into a concrete idea and building a database because I left earlier. Now here, I basically told all the coaches in the organization that they have to scout. They have to watch. Not only because I want to read the reports, which I do, but also because they come into the office. Hey, did you see that inbound in that game? Hey, did you see that outburst of Trinchieri or of Radonjic or you name it? That triggers a conversation. One of the things that, just to let you know, I'm going to do is that I proposed to Damon Green, who is my partner in crime in these things, and he's my preferred victim because I always throw all of these ideas to him. We're going to have an internal magazine it's a PDF file, with youth coaches are going to choose a topic. We didn't issue the first release yet, but we're going to have it from now on. So if there's any youth coach of Bayern Munich listening, this is what you guys will have to do in the future also. But seriously, it is just something that triggers and starts, strikes up a conversation about basketball. And you drag people out of the comfort zone because this is what you're expected to do. That's out of the comfort zone. There's a learning zone.
I have another quote of Rick Pitino.
I've also a quote. I'm sorry.
Take your ass out of the comfort zone.
Oh, you know who it said?
Yeah, of course I do.
Anytime you make a coaching change, a new culture comes in, is the quote from him. And are you guys a little bit afraid of a new coaching culture?
When did he say that? What year was that?
2019.
He said
it's a EuroLeague interview a couple of weeks ago.
Okay. I disagree with this. That might be his opinion because of his professional experience.
So are you afraid of a new culture, maybe?
No, not at all. I just told you I had a lot of cultures coming in, and the question is how the coming in culture is willing to submit the culture to the culture of the club. The question is, what culture does the club have? And if the culture is poor, any vision that comes in with a new coach, and this is what I would say, doesn't work.
How much does the culture of the basketball department of the club differs from the culture of the football department?
Because in FC Bayern, you mean?
Yes.
I have no knowledge of the football part, so I can't answer the question.
The coaching situation was pretty similar to yours in basketball because Niko Kovac won the cup and the championship.
Yeah, but
by accident.
By accident. Yeah, but it means the DNA of the club is maybe the same in the football and in the basketball department. It's about winning titles, the winning approach. We have to win games. We have to win titles.
And what is winning, in your opinion?
Winning is to...
No. Is it a goal, winning?
Yes.
Well, I think it's an ambition winning. To win is an ambition. You can't control that. The goal is to maximize the resources that you have and get to the point when you give yourself a chance to play to win. Because you're never going to win if you don't play to win. That's one of those stupid and obvious quotes, but it gets overlooked. Now, I can't say, well, the goal is to win the championship. Not myself. I speak for myself in this moment, and this is Baiesi speaking, not Baiesi of FC Bayern. Mm-hmm. I mean, I respect other opinions, I respect other approaches, but I stick to mine. And I believe that if you build a strong culture and a brilliant vision together with a strong culture where not there's comfort in, I'm not saying there's comfort in the things you do, but there's comfort between people, there's loyalty, there's trust, there's mm-hmm. communication, mm. there is a clear a set of rules that and principles that get accepted, not at the conscious level, but at a subconscious level. Because there's a difference between bureaucracy and strong culture. Mm-hmm. Poor cultures need to believe in rules, and this is why we have bureaucracy. And I'm quoting a book from Simon Sinek in that sense. But there's a huge difference. For example, I never had to find a player in Bamberg. Never. Not because I'm the good Samaritan, you know, not because I'm the good cop or the good teacher, but because I never had anybody except one time, one young guy going out of the rules.
Mm. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure if I agree with the Pitino quote here, because in your opinion, how many coaches are able to implement culture into a club? Because I don't think that many coaches are able to really change a club's or organization's culture. If you think the level of, I don't know if you want to do the football comparison again, like Guardiola or a Klopp.
So I'll give you this example.
Yeah. Or Steve Kerr, Golden State is a good example, I think. Or Popovic.
Well, Popovic has a different role.
Different, yeah.
He has a different title and a different role. But, for example, you take UCLA. John Wooden has been there for a million years. Do you think that a new coach that comes into UCLA is going to change the culture? If he changes the culture, he's going to get fired at the speed of light.
Yeah.
He might bring another, like I said, another vision, maybe. But he has to stick to the culture of that school. He can't come in and say everything that John Wooden said is BS.
Mm.
He's going to get shot right away.
So is the challenge for FC Bayern at the moment to find this identity at the moment? Or this vision? I mean, not the vision maybe, but where is FC Bayern in this regard at the moment? Where are you now?
Well, I think that this is a young club. I mean, the only thing I can compare to the football team is the age. Because in the end, this club has been in on the map of basketball over the last 10-something years. The football team has been in the elite of soccer for 120 years. Mm-hmm. It means something.
Mm-hmm.
When I compared ourselves, not ourselves, but where we are right now and where Žalgiris is right now, I mean, Žalgiris won the EuroLeague 20 years ago.
Mm.
We can't fill this gap just by snapping the fingers.
Yeah. Mm.
You have to go through a lot. And this is why I go back to the game 3 with Frankfurt on a short term.
And
this
know,
built some culture, because how do you react in that situation? I was there. I know what was said between staff, management, and team. I know.
Mm-hmm.
And I know how we're going to go through difficulties in that sense.
Yeah. At the end of this extra edition of our podcast, let's talk about one more time about the main topic. It's the coaching position of Bayern München. Right now, it's Oliver Kostic. And as far as I understand the press conference from yesterday, you're not looking for a new coach right now. Is this correct?
Correct. I said we have a coach.
You have a coach, and the chances that Oliver Kostic will end this season are higher than hiring a new coach during this season.
Well, I hope for his health that he's going to end the season on the bench. he's our coach, period.
Mm.
That's the end of the discussion. If you want me to add one thing about the coach's position right now, a coach is, at one time I was talking to Gianmarco Pozzecco, who is labeled as, but you know, is that guy crazy funny? He's crazy ex-player. Well, I think that he went a little bit off the stereotype in that sense. His team has quality and substance, not just today. It was the same last year, so you got to give him credit. I was talking to him at the Final Four in London in 2012 or 13. And he said to me like, yeah, you know, one time Coach Messina told me that in the end, coaching is having your players do what you want them to do. It's a simple quote. It's a simple thing to say. Yep. How do you do that? How do you make your players do what you want them to do? There's a lot of ways. Just like when you talk about the NBA, people talk about Golden State. Wow, they're great, they're good. Before they were talking about the Spurs. Wow, they're great, they're good. But there's not one way of winning the NBA title because Golden State built it through draft and free agency. Miami never drafted an international guy. Maybe once, but a long time ago. But they did it through free agency. The Pistons are not Miami or the Lakers market. We could not assemble a team to compete for the title by trying to lure LeBron James. He's not coming to Detroit. That's the end of the story. It's fair, as simple as that. So this means Oliver is expected to do the things he does to have the players do the things he wants. The players know what they have to do. They know, they've been knowing, and they are told, and they are coached. And in that sense, it is a question of how many players you can win right now. I think Oliver has it very, 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 very clear in that sense.
We are looking forward to the next matches. I'm pretty optimistic for the CSKA match, to be honest.
I can only say and ask you guys, you're the media, so, and the only thing I can ask is to stick to the performance, not the result.
And competing.
If the team competes and loses, we're playing the defending champions. And with one of the best coaches of, if not the best one, of the new generation. Yep. And a team that has a player I love that is, okay.
Yanis Treniks.
Hackett.
Well, okay, forget Yanis and Hackett, I was about to say, is Darren Hilliard.
Oh, you love Darren Hilliard. Okay.
Yeah, he was drafted by the Pistons. And yeah, he's stuck with the Pistons for 2 years. But he never played with Moreau. So, for example, this time, it is important to see different body language, different attitude, different faces, like Oliver said.
Guy like Hilliard, tough to get for Bayern?
Apparently impossible.
Impossible?
It was impossible.
That's what I tried to ask before. How
it was
tough
not
it is.
Possible, not impossible. No, not
it
possible.
Was not possible. Yeah. So just for people to understand how difficult it still is for an organization, but like by a young organization, that's a very, I think, important point that people tend to forget because they just hear the brand FC Bayern. But the brand FC Bayern in European basketball isn't, like you said, the same as in football, of course. So what are the main challenges when it comes to recruiting players? Just that people maybe can understand what's the challenge of getting high-level guys.
Well,
besides money, of course.
It's only money. No, not only.
No,
80%.
This is not true. No. But I want to tell you one. I'm not talking about Bayern now, but because I mean, a lot of things are happening now, and you might end up saying the wrong thing that gets misunderstood. So I'll give an example from the Bamberg years. Oh. When we brought in Darius Miller, Darius Miller ended up the last season making 10 times what he made the first season. In the middle, there was in between, there was, I think, 15 months. Okay. So this is what I sold to Darius.
Yeah.
Okay. And you come there, you stay there as long as you need, of course, as long as you can be productive for us, of course. And I'm sure that if you keep doing the right thing, then the score of the game will take care of itself and you will be where you belong. But then you have to trust us that we are going to be the right guys to develop your talent first.
Yeah.
Second, when Darius came in, we had 7 foreigners. One guy sat out in the cup finals. Obviously, we beat Alba with Josh Duncan out, and everybody's super happy. The same people who were super happy the first day because Darius played and we beat Alba were blaming Andrea for sitting out Josh Duncan in the final, in the championship game. So the most difficult thing is not to get caught in these superficial mm-hmm. comments. Mm-hmm. That kind of comment got to our owner's table back then. And of course, we were interrogated. Well, I believed that Darius Miller should have played that game, should have played the second game. And I believe that Darius Miller benefit from playing those games. And I believe that he was one of the main factors of the success that happened in Bamberg Ooh. Those years.
Of course.
So, but if we get caught into what people are saying, first of all, we're not doing our job well. And second of all, we get misled. And this is something that, this is why it is tricky. I understand it's seducing. I mean, you get on this website and they speak so highly about you. And you easily get caught. I am so glad and so happy that the first year as a general manager in Biella, we went 13-4 in the first leg. There was Siena that broke all the records. And then there was us, the small Biella. Wow, Biella here, Jerebko there, and blah, 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 blah. And the second part of the season, we signed Keith Langford that year. We had Jerebko. We had good players. We went 3-14 in the second leg. And I remember why. And I know where I messed everything up, the mistakes I made. I remember going in press conference and saying, like, if the owner wants to fire me, he can do it. And the journalist said, like, well, the owner can fire you without telling you. You don't have to come to press conference and say it. And I'm like, damn, he's right. He can fire me anytime. Mm-hmm. So why should I care about these things? I do what I'm called up to do, what I'm expected to do, and I try to do it at my best. And I always try to get better. I always try to go down the less crowded road in that sense, to find out new things. Mm. In that sense, I meant challenging the organization. This is to answer your question, the type of work that I'm trying to do.
Daniele, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You have any more questions, Alex?
Oh, good. I have always more questions, but we're pretty long already.
We're pretty long already. Thank you very much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for yours.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And we're looking forward.
You guys have material now from like for five podcasts.
No, just one XXL
one
episode.
One XXL episode. Well, it's almost the same length than usual. Good luck for you guys in the next games. And I hope everything will work out fine for you. And we have a chance to, maybe that Bayern will reach the playoffs. I'd like to have a little more, drama in the next weeks.
Well,
drama is an interesting word there.
I can say that, everybody is wishing for that. Maybe it happens. Perhaps it doesn't happen. I think, like I said, we have to take every game like it's the last one. But I also believe that, like I said before, if we keep doing the right things, then the score of the game will take care of itself. And so far, we didn't do the right things.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mille grazie, Daniele.
Grazie a voi.
See you.
Buon anno a tutti.
See you at Audi Dome tomorrow night.
Ciao.